Good evening. My name is Sam. I'm from the Active Directory team. Today, my focus is to give you a perspective on how to secure access to applications through ADFS. For a subset of our demos, we're going to highlight it through the lens of work folders, which also integrates with ADFS. But I'll come to that a bit later. Starting off a little bit, but before I get started, I do take questions in between, so please raise your hand or head to the mic. It always is a lot more fun when it's a little bit more interactive during sessions. So if you have a question, raise your hand. We'll try to get through them. If we don't have time, we'll kind of push them out to at the end of the session. I'm sure you know, if you have a few minutes, I will fundamentally come by, you know, hang out here for a few minutes, and we can chat it then. So this is a slide that you probably saw a little. How many of you kind of gone through either the foundation key, session about people-centric IT? This is on Monday. Okay, so we have a few people there. How many of you went to the session this morning, which Uday provided a perspective about workplace join and its value devices? Okay, so we have a few more. So this is a slide that was shown this morning. But my key focus, my takeaway that I want you to take away, rather, is that in the old version of ADFS, what you could do is you could you provided protection to access for end users accessing resources. These could be cloud-based resources that like Office 365 or Azure Active or through Azure Active Directory, or it could be other cloud providers, or it could be resources like SharePoint in a partner's organization, or in even your organization. So the one key difference in terms of us expanding our value for customers is that we have added the notion of being able to support devices, being able to recognize these devices, being able to join them to AD, and as a result, we can authenticate them and drive access. We'll discuss that in a short bit. In addition, we've also added the capability by extending the ADFS proxy to become a web application proxy to deal with a few set of resources. You may have a set of resources that's inside your firewall that you want to kind of extend and protect, protect it at the edge with your appropriate policies. So we've extended that as well, and this is just a quick view of certain set of capabilities. I'm gonna delve in a lot of the minute details as much as I possibly can in terms of thinking about the security of it. Now, with respect to the capabilities, this is a slide also that was earlier today, just to set some context. Now, I wanted to kind of reinforce the context of what workplace join truly means to ADFS. Now, the first thing, so for the most, like when you really get down to the technical details there, it's essentially we're provisioning a certificate onto the device that binds the user and the device. It's a relationship about the user and the device. Now, as a result, we can collect that certificate seamlessly underneath the covers for the end user without the end user really knowing about it. What it really gives us is twofold in terms of information workers is because we know it is your device, we can give you longer-lived sessions. It's not any random kiosk. It's not any random machine out in the internet that's kind of connecting. We can give you a longer-lived session as a result of it. Now, the second aspect is more about the IT side of it. Now, if you provision that device, really, like you've gone through the workplace join using, let's say, Phone Factor or Windows Azure Active Authentication, it gives you the ability to think of it as a seamless multi-factor, which is great because end users sometimes struggle with dealing with multi-factor, and this is a seamless mechanism for it to happen. And as a result, it's convenience for the end user, but it also gives IT the ability, the additional security to be able to say, okay, this request was fundamentally from a device that a user registered. And I'll get a little bit into the lost device case and show you some experience as well later. The final aspect is because you fundamentally know about the device, you are able to gate access to resources based on this condition. So there is a state about the device. There might be attributes about the device. You have the ability to essentially gate access control decisions. So for a specific application, you might say, it based on a certain sensitivity of the application, you may say it's only allowed to register devices, whereas maybe my news feed, which is like Microsoft within our company that we have, which aggregates public news and sends it and it's available in an application, may not be the one that I really kind of care about. But I'm going to my HR web or something like that, I want additional protection. So this is fundamentally gives you the ability to gate access to resources based on this device. But my goal is not to focus on that. In addition, I briefly explained this notion of our concept is really trying to extend the work from anywhere concept for end users. Because what we want is that end users, they want to be productive. They want to work from anywhere. They want to work from their Starbucks shop, on a beach in Hawaii. You know, it really doesn't matter. They, you know, and businesses want because there's a value to it. So as part of a work from anywhere, not only do we have VPN, we have direct access, we also have the notion of web application proxy because it has its own advantages in terms for a certain set of applications and how customers think about it. We have a session tomorrow on more details on the web application proxy. So if you're interested, please do go by. My focus today is going to be more on the next two segments out here, which are colored in blue, which is about really thinking about multi-factor authentication, what are the improvements that we've done in ADFS for that, as well as multi-factor access control. Now, we've always had the capability before in prior versions to say for a application, gate access based on attributes about the user. Now, what we've done is that we've extended that concept about not just about the user, it's about the device, it's about the network location and information about, let's say, IP addresses if you want it. So that's the level of flexibility that we provide for admins to gate access. Finally, to complete the picture, when we think about our investments for bring your own devices, more and more we're seeing the trend where not just consumer apps, business apps want to build native experiences on these devices. And the model fundamentally is to have resources be exposed as REST-based services, and as a result, and get access to them. Now, the model that we support is the notion of using OAuth, and Vittorio out there back just had a session on the client side and the server side libraries that support that, and ADFS is one of the service. ADFS, from an on-premises Active Directory perspective and Azure Active Directory, both will be able to support those endpoints so that an application developer can easily build an app that conforms, can talk to on-premises Active Directory or the cloud-based Active Directory. So both are fundamentally possible. Now, let's get going. So how do I really think about securing access? I've broken this down for the presentation today into four key segments. Now, the first is about how do you control authentication? Like, there are different types of apps that you may want to differentiate between inside versus outside. This is about that. Now, the second portion is about how do you authorize? What are the types of capabilities that we offer, and what are the types of experiences that we provide as authorizing end users to specific applications? Now, the third one is about protecting user accounts. We've always had the notion, as you start to expand and say people can work from anywhere and can log in from anywhere, there are more potential risks. We've always had the notion of being inside your firewall, which provided a set of benefits. Now, more people want to work from outside. You have cloud-based services that essentially are made for, like, you know, you can access it from anywhere. So how do you kind of think about security from the perspective of end users? What are some additional capabilities that we've added in the next release of ADFS to support that? Finally, it's about these devices as well. As we think of the continuum of being able to join these devices, what are the types of protections that we've kind of thought about? And I'll highlight them through a series of demos. Now, let's jump into governing authentication. I'm going to try to get through with the slides as much so that I can play around with demos and show you some of the use cases and experiences. Now, when we think about authentication, we think about it as a two-step process. You've heard a lot about two-step verification fundamentally across a lot, you know, that terminology is being used. Well, we call it primary and additional authentication, but it's about fundamentally the same. So there's a notion of a primary authentication. This governs all applications. And when you think about it, ADFS is just an authentication head on top of AD. So we support all the standard type of credentials that AD supports, which is Windows integrated. It supports username, password. It supports certificate-based authentication. All of these are supported in box within ADFS. And we have the ability for admins to differentiate them between inside versus outside. This is very common because people have a different sense of how they think about security because of physical security to kind of get inside. There's usually a little more relaxed security inside versus outside. It's very common. But a key point, a difference from the prior version, was that it was really difficult for you to manage this differentiation and be able to do that. Now, with the new version of ADFS, all of this is policy-driven. I'll show that in a minute, where you just click what you want for inside versus outside, and that gets and you get to decide what you want. Now, another key aspect of authentication was that a lot of customers came to give us feedback that even inside the network, which we optimize for Windows Integrated Authentication, because domain joined machines can seamlessly access or get a token from ADFS, as a result of being domain joined and being inside the network. Now, one of the things that people had were feedback was that, hey, I use different browsers. It doesn't support Windows Integrated Authentication. As a result, what happens is that I get this ugly NTLM prompt, and my end users get scared, or it becomes a help desk call. And that's something that we've heard quite often from customers. So, to solve that, what we did was that we introduced this notion of Windows Integrated Authentication fallback to forms. Now, what that means is that inside the network, if Windows Integrated Authentication is chosen, based on the user agent that an admin can fundamentally feed in, we can say that the approved list of Windows Integrated Authentication user agents. Now, if it doesn't fall out of this, we automatically fall back to forms. So, in fact, if you come with a non-IE browser inside your corporate network, even on your Windows machine, or you connected a iOS device on directly onto your corporate network, now we support the ability to automatically fall back to forms so that the end user experience is a lot more seamless in nature. So that's something that we've added in this new release. Now, of course, as part of thinking about our first stage of authentication, we support device authentication, and it's a simple click to essentially enable that. I'll get to that. Another key feature, so remember I mentioned the notion of workplace join gives us that ability to have longer-lived sessions. Now, that may apply to a lot of applications. But as probably you and I know, there are some applications that you want a credential to be presented every time you access the application. These tend to be sensitive in nature. Now, to support that, we also have a notion on a per-application basis. You can just enable a checkbox that says that I want, if the user accesses this application, I want them to provide a fresh set of credentials. It doesn't matter. And then the rest of the policy kind of kicks in as part of doing that. So that's also a new capability that we've added. So let me kind of quickly go into my demo environment. So we're right now at the ADFS MMC console. Can people see this? Okay. So give me a second. Let's zoom it. So we've added a new, you see a new tab out there or a node in the tree on the left side for authentication policies. Let me click on that for a second. Okay, so now this is what that governs your primary authentication. So this kind of gives you the ability to fundamentally just be able to select what are the things that you want between your inside versus your outside. Now, when you add one or more, typically, what it means is that in this case, there is no clear path, and end user can make a choice as a result. However, we put in some special code for just Windows Integrated Authentication to seamlessly always choose that, because when it's there, we really want to use, and it'll always fall back to forms if we need to fall back, so that's something that we've optimized for. Now, to enable the device authentication for doing this workplace join, it's a simple click that fundamentally says enable device authentication. Now, as a result, what ADFS does underneath the covers is that
Because we issue the certificates, we essentially ask the client to send that certificate to us seamlessly underneath the covers based on certain provisions in client TLS. And we are able to get that certificate, prove it's that device, and as a result, we can kind of continue processing on more items in there. Okay, so before we do, I'm going to get started by quickly just showcasing some of the basics in here. So I want to go to this machine. Okay, so I'm also going to showcase a few of some of our customization experience. One of the key things is that ADFS in the next version does not depend upon IIS anymore. It relies on HTTP.sys. However, one of the things that we've provided is a series of configuration controls to enable admins to not have to go to web.config, not open a piece of code, to essentially change the sign-in experiences just with PowerShell commandlets or UI-based tools. Now, I'm going to, okay, so to showcase that, I don't like this logo. It's really bland, and I do not like our Microsoft-approved standard Contoso logo. So we decided, okay, let me create a new logo and add it to ADFS. So, okay, let me go to my, now it's as simple as taking a, It's as simple as using a PowerShell commandlet to change the theme. The sign-in experiences have a theme, and I can add a logo or an illustration image. What the illustration that you saw on that sign-in page on the left is fundamentally I've updated a new image into ADFS just through PowerShell that says minus illustration, and then I provided the PNG file for it. So let's run this. Okay. Now let's refresh. There you go. We want people to get in, come into work, and be, you know, relaxed when they kind of sign in to kind of go do work. So we want to make that experience as relaxing as possible. Yes, we have a question. You are restricted to use this because we control the sign-in experiences through that. But we've improved a series of functionality based on all the feedback that we've got from customers on what they want to change. And we've added quite a few in there. I'm not going to talk about that much, but we'll be blogging about some of those details in a short while. We can chat offline in terms of what you're looking for as well. Okay, so that's good. So let me log in, and I wanted to show you something. We'll use our John Doe account. Okay, so in this case, unfortunately, okay, so now, this is just a dump of the context. So the reason why I wanted to show this was twofold. One is the notion that you get all of this information to actually drive authorization and some of additional capabilities that we've had. A key improvement that we made is that we've improved the ability to kind of enhance our request context over to claims so that you can fundamentally have that values of the request context. In this case, you can see there are two IP informations out there because the reason is that my client went to the web application proxy, and the web application proxy connected to ADFS. So as a result, there was a forwarded IP, which is fundamentally my actual client IP, which is the outbound IP address from the network out here. And you see my web application's proxy, which is the 10.0 address space. Now, in addition, we provide a few more things. The notion it's inside corporate network is false because it's coming from outside, so that if you want to differentiate between in terms of your policies, you actually have the ability to key off that. It's going through my proxy, the endpoint information. Now, another key aspect that we've added is the notion of a consistent activity ID that kind of flows through the system. So which is the notion that so that when you're thinking about debugging and those tracing capabilities, you have a consistent that kind of flows between our proxy as well as STS. You can collect all the traces through one ID. So I am going to go back to my presentation. All right. Now, the next step is that we've talked about the first stage of authentication, the fact that you can look at, you know, do policies such that you can think of a policy about inside versus outside, the ability to control and force authentication, all of that. Now we're going to focus on the second stage. We've already authenticated with a credential of AD. We have a context. We have that all the data that I showed you, which is about the request, which is about the user information, which potentially is also about the device if I come from a workplace joined device, which I don't in this case, not yet at least. And you have all of that information. However, applications aren't made equal in nature. There are, if you look at a set of 100 applications, you'll probably see that you've got about 20 applications that are more sensitive in nature. You don't want to force multi-factor authentication for everything. And it's not all your users who get to use those applications. So one of the key things that we've added is the notion of being able to trigger additional authentication based on all of this data that you have. So you could trigger based on a security group if a user belonged to a security group, or you can trigger based on attributes about the device. You can trigger based upon the location. For example, you might even write a rule that say, if the IP address range that it was provided to me happened to be outside of this range, then I want to trigger additional authentication. Those are all the set of capabilities that you now have based on writing rules to say on a per application basis that does that. Now, a common example, is that you may have an application that has a range of users. You have your standard users and you have the administrators of the application. They also tend to log into the application. So, for example, if you wanted to say the admins are privileged people, and so they have to log in with their multi-factor authentication as an operator of the application, then all you have to do is to be able to kind of say, write a simple rule saying, if they happen to be belonging to a security group, you can just click object picker, say, they need additional authentication, and you're done. So that is the level of flexibility that we provide. And these are just simple examples to highlight the notion of user, device, and location. Now, you can combine a whole, it's all based on a claims-based language that we have, and you can do more, but we have UI that kind of helps some of the basic use cases associated with thinking about security groups, devices, as well as location. Not only do we support it as part of really thinking about it on a per-application basis, however, there might be some global policies that apply. And in that case, you also have the ability to write in a single place a rule that says, govern, do this to trigger additional authentication for all my applications. Now, that will control, like say it so happens all your privileged, like your VPs or some for some reason, your executives require multi-factor authentication because they are always doing privilege operations, or your comptroller always has to kind of do additional authentication, any application that they go to. Those are all mechanisms. We also supply the ability to kind of control it at an global level. So we do support inbox. We've always supported whatever AD supported, which is X509-based authentication. We continue to support that, so smart cards will continue to be supported from that perspective. Now, this is all great. This is saying that, okay, on a per-application basis, you can trigger additional authentication. Now, however, before, we were limited in what we could do. We had challenges from that perspective. We supported X509, but we have customers that had a wide range of solutions. Phone-based solutions are continuing to kind of grow in terms of the market. Phone-based OTP, phone-based voice. There's so many of these that's out there. So what we did in this release of ADFS is to focus and provide the right a framework in which any third-party provider can integrate with ADFS using a standard framework. Now, the principles that we fundamentally used as part of this was that, we wanted to know about it because the reason is that ADFS, then admin has the ability to kind of say, based on the authentication, they may want to send the data to a downstream application or even control access based on that notion of additional authentication. In prior versions, if you had to kind of, some people did a few implementations of outside of ADFS underneath IIS's HTTP extensions. They could do that, but as a result, it was totally outside of the purview of ADFS. We didn't even know about it. It so happened to be a gate that was outside of ADFS. Now what we did was we've enabled a new framework to support any form of third parties to essentially be able to integrate with ADFS. Now the way it works is there, another key principle that we really wanted to adhere to was that we've done a lot of work to try to simplify our sign-in experiences, to make it, you'll see a lot of our defaults being very similar to Azure Active Directory. There's a standard look and feel. For how many of you have heard about Azure Pack? Okay. So if you, Azure Pack uses ADFS as well to, so that for hosting providers, you can fundamentally integrate and you'll look, and I think one of the demos that the folks at the book were showing that, hey, I go to Azure, I get a sign-in experience. I go to Azure Pack that's running on-premises. It looks pretty much the same. So that's the level in terms of driving a clear perspective. Yes, we have a question. Yes. Not in this release. Not in this release. So this is always a two-step. We won't get into that. Yes. Yes, but that is a function of what stores it supports. Okay. So, in sum, yeah. Yes. Okay. The question was ACS has the ability to hook into consumer identity providers, and that is a function of Azure Active Directory. We'll continue to support that. All right. Now, another key aspect when we thought about additional authentication within the framework is that a lot of them may have challenge response mechanisms. So our framework supports. So you, an end user might supply an input, they get back a response, for example, another challenge that says, oh, I answered only three out of the five questions. So let me give you like two more or trigger you to do something else. So those are all mechanisms that are possible within the framework. And the sign-in experience has a very consistent look and feel, so an end user is not really necessarily thinking about very distinct sign-in experiences at the end of it. Finally, it's also the additional authentication provider can also add additional context about the authentication or of the user to say, hey, like for example, one of the things that we had in our test, like when we were building this out, was that, oh, we had a security question answer response. So it could say, hey, you answered 4 out of 6 questions. And that could all be added into the context that can help later downstream. Now, before we get into the demo on this, we're going to show a lens through Windows Work Folders. And to introduce, give you a very quick soundbite on Windows Folders, we have Adam out here from the file server team to provide that.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, everyone else. So before Sam shows you how work folders can take advantage of ADFS, I'm going to do a little cameo from the presentation I did yesterday on what work folders is. And we'll start just by talking about the file server. The file server has been around for decades. It is, in fact, the original server workload. And it's grown. Exabytes of data are now deployed annually just to support information workers. The file server was designed to be incredibly simple and efficient, and it now offers continuous availability and breakthrough performance. And around the file server, an ecosystem of utilities and applications to help you manage and protect data has emerged. But expectations have changed. this guy expects to be able to get to his files on his devices from wherever he happens to be. He also happens to be the CEO. Do you want to tell him that he's violating corporate data policies? Do you think he's going to listen to you? You have three choices. You can forbid what he's doing, and he'll find a way to work around you. You can ignore it, which has the same effect. Or you can choose to deploy work folders and empower your employees. Clicker's not working. Thank you, Sam. You can empower your employees by allowing them to access their individual user data from wherever they happen to be. What we do is seamlessly sync that data from their device to the file server, so that that data that used to only exist in one location and left the organization with the employee is now brought into a file server without changing any of the habits of the end user, so that you can protect it. From a device's perspective, our priority is Windows 8.1 at release. But very shortly after release, we're going to add support for Windows 7, because we know that's probably what you're using in your organization today. And we'll add support for iPad, because we know that that's what your employees are asking you to support on their personal devices. Access from anywhere means that it's just an HTTP protocol, and you publish it just like you would any other web app. No VPN is required to access their work data. And you can do this while letting your users comply with corporate data governance policies. This is an overview of the topology of a single server work folders deployment. As I said, the file server just publishes a URL to the reverse proxy. And devices can connect from outside the network environment over a secure SSL connection to the work folder server. From inside the organization, we support Windows authentication using Kerberos. From outside of the firewall, we'll support integrated authentication. I'm sorry, digest authentication. We have the option of supporting ADFS. And there's three things I want you to think about for why work folders should be deployed with ADFS. The first is to support those devices coming through the reverse proxy using digest authentication in a multi-forest environment. The second is to support multi-factor authentication, like Sam was talking about. And whatever ADFS can do for us in multi-factor authentication, we can take advantage of. The third is to limit sync to registered devices. And a registered device can be a domain-joined device, or it can be a non-domain-joined device that has done a workplace join. Other policies that you can set on the server and enforce on the client include a device lock and forcing a password, as well as encrypting the work folder's container with strong encryption to ensure that those files are secure, and then letting you take advantage of selective wipe to wipe just the organization's data from the device without erasing that user's last family vacation photos. Because this is a file server, you can take advantage of all of the great functionality we have for managing data. You can set quotas by user, by directory. You can screen out certain files based on their file type, and you can do reporting on the content that's on the file server. And finally, you can take advantage of the file server's ability to do automatic classification. Based on the contents of the document, we can assign a classification, and then we can use RMS to automatically encrypt highly sensitive data, so that from the device, if the user would take a file and send it in an email message or put it on a USB drive, give it to somebody else who shouldn't have access, RMS will force authentication and not allow that sensitive data to leak into the wrong hands. And with that, I'll turn it back to Sam to show you how this works together. But it looks like there's a couple of questions if Sam, okay, go ahead. It's a good question. The question is Office 365 going to offer work folders? Office 365 has its own client device sync capabilities that they call SkyDrive Pro. If you're using Office 365 in the cloud, or even if you're using SharePoint servers on premises, you can take advantage of SkyDrive Pro to give your users access to that information. This is for the environment that uses file servers to store data, wherever those file servers happen to be located. And if you want, you can go back to the session that I did yesterday. It was a deep dive on work folders. And we talk a little bit more about comparing SkyDrive, SkyDrive Pro, and work folders. Another question.
How is complex when multiple users are updating the same file?
Yeah. So the question is, how do we handle conflicts? I'm going to give a quick answer here. And again, I'll refer back to my presentation from yesterday. Work folders is for the individual user data. In this release, we're not supporting shared data on the server. But you can still get into a conflict situation for the user on multiple devices if they change the file in multiple places. We have a very simple approach where we never lose data, and we create a conflict file for the one that's older, which is the original file name with a device name where the change happened appended to it. I'll take one more, and then I've got to give it back to Sam. Go ahead. Is it compatible with Office Web Apps? In this release, we haven't done any integration with Office Web Apps. But again, I'll remind you that this is an on-prem file server. You could certainly take advantage of web app capability. It's something for us to think about in a future release.
What was the name of your presentation from yesterday?
It's Windows Server Workfolders Deep Dive. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it. So one of the key things I want to really highlight from this presentation was that all the sets of capabilities that we are discussing applies to all of these types of resources that can fundamentally trust ADFS. We've got work folders, we've got apps through the web proxy, cloud-based services, all of these extend. So I'll quickly get into the demo. Okay.
Oh, here we go. Great. Thank you. So I think the question is, what do we do in terms of selective wipe? Am I getting the question?
Right. So all those features you're saying, you can force the device into security
mode. Right.
How's that happening?
So the question is, how do we enforce policies on the client? It's all enforced through the work folders client. So our application, our service, which comes with Windows 8.1 and will be delivered as an app for other platforms, is making sure that it's enforcing the policies that you set on the server. And if that doesn't answer the question, I'll be around after this talk as well. So come up. We can talk work folders a lot. I want you to hear all the content that Sam has for ADFS specifically.
Okay. So we right now have we're going to set up a work folders relationship, and we're going to show multi-factor authentication through that. So in this case, before I get started, let me quickly walk you through. I already have, this is the finance team. Let's assume it's the finance team that's established a sync, a share for all of its employees in the department. Now, most of the data out here is sensitive, so it's likely to be encrypted as well as part of that. And you may essentially offer the capability to provide some level of sensitive data over to some of these devices. Now, as a result, I'm going to set up my relationship, and I happen to be Joe in this case. Now, I just typed in my email address. We found where your work folders was, and we're already authenticating. And you saw that right now, that we now can authenticate. So one of the key things, actually, this is cool to show this. One of the aspects of our sign-in experience is that a lot of people talked about being able to adapt to different form factors. So all of ADFS's sign-in experiences kind of are responsive design. So as you, depending upon the different form factors, we will adapt our aspects. So as you see more being displayed, and as I start compressing, you will see it shrink and shrink more. That's something that we added in terms of this release. So let me sign in as John Doe. Sorry, this is Joe Finance. Let me check the policy first before I do this. So right now, I'm on ADFS. So let's look at the UI out here. So the first thing that I want to highlight is that, as you saw, I talked about authentication policies. But you can now, on a per application, be able to define your policies. So I'm going to click on the per application, relying party trust. And right now, there's no policy set for a specific application that has custom policies. So I'm going to click the work folders and edit custom multi-factor authentication. Now, in this case, like I said, we're able to trigger additional authentication based on a wide variety of factors, based on the user, based on the device, based on the location. So we've simplified a few of the things that you have, saying that, hey, if it happens to be a security group that you belong to, which you can, or an end user, specific set of users for this application, I want to trigger additional authentication. You have the object picker, and I'll come to that in a second. Or you can base it on the devices, which says registered or unregistered, or based on the location as well, that you can define this. All of these are, you can think of them as ORed conditions. But if you want ANDed conditions, then you use PowerShell and the claims language to be able to express that. So I'm going to add the finance work group, work folders group, which Joe Finance belongs to this. And that's it. This implies that anyone that belonged to that security group will be triggered for additional authentication for this application. Now let's jump to our client and log in. Okay, so we logged in, and because we saw that Joe would belong to the finance group, we are now going to get prompted for an additional validation that it was truly Joe. I've hooked up Joe to the phone, and we're now showing the adaptive framework that I discussed, which is our third-party framework in which Windows Azure Authentication, Active Authentication, also known as Phone Factor, we've kind of had a built-in adapter that was registered with ADFS, and now that is the one that's controlling some of the experiences out here. So hitting continue will likely give me a call. Let's give it a second. There you go.
Thank you for using Microsoft's sign-in verification system. Press the pound key to finish signing in.
Okay.
You have been signed in. Goodbye.
And that was pretty much it. So we have the ability to kind of control on a per application basis to be to trigger additional authentication as required. And now if I completed the set of policies that, as Adam pointed out, that the admin would be configuring, and that's it. So I've now been able to sync. And if I go and look into Joe, I see a new folder called Works Folders that was set up. And the file data that was actually available on the server just got synced onto my device. Now you have the ability now, as a result, end users can be productive by being able to have their file-based data available. So that concludes. But now again, just to kind of showcase a little bit of a framework, not only do we have like Phone Factor, which is extension of Microsoft, we are also working with other partners as well. And I'm going to showcase another partner provider for that. And so to do that, what I am going to do is run my scripts for, or go back to the UI. And I'm going to take the same Who Am I app that you've been seeing show all the claims. And I'm going to add saying my John Doe user requires additional authentication. Now, in addition, I'm also going to add a new adapter or provider for multi-factor, which is an adapter from SafeNet's system, and we'll discuss that in a second. I've just added that into the configuration mix. And so now I go back to the client. Let's try to access the application again. John Doe. Oh, thank you. So now you see that at this part of this, like previously John got into Who Am I without this. I added the policy that says John needed additional authentication. Now you see the fact that John, essentially, we have two mechanisms, two adapters that provide additional authentication. The reason why we chose to offer this capability is that we've heard a lot of customers say that I have potentially more than one solution. And as the people think about phone and SMS systems as well, some differ between a global organization, and they have different types of systems available. So we make it, or in some cases, it may be a choice. Do I have my hardware token, or do I have my phone on me? Those are the types of, from a convenience perspective, we have the ability. Yes, we have a question. We don't have that capability in this release. It is global as a choice, then the end user gets a choice, but you can control it with authorization decision, and I'll show you a little bit in a short bit on how you can control that. That's fair feedback. We'll take that into consideration. So in this case, now I'm going to use the SafeNet's authentication service. I've already paired my device to get soft OTP tokens on the application. Yes. Oh, sorry. There's a question here. So the callback feature, this is a function of Windows Azure Active Authentication or Phone Factor, and they support a wide variety of mechanisms. I have a slide, and I'll get to that in a second. So in this case, I've gotten SafeNet's software OTP provisioned on my Nokia out here, and I'm going to just enter my PIN for a second. I'm sure people can't see this, but I'll... So I'm going to log in. And as you can see, this is an adapter that SafeNet's adapter is delivering. It's delivering the sign-in experience within ADFS. And I have a one-time code out here that I can enter as of using the OTP. So let me go back. And that kind of gets me into the application. So irrespective of whatever customers have within their enterprise, we have the capability to essentially integrate across a wide variety of systems to do that. Okay, back to slides. Now, the two things that you saw out here, so just to discuss a little bit of the capabilities, so... We showed you Windows Azure Active Authentication. It has a wide variety. Like, you can think about voice messages, voice phrases, PIN phrases,
software OTP as well as the ability, and they also have a software OTP application on phones available for you. Is that was the question in terms of what are the capabilities? So PhoneFactor had an adapter that was registered with the ADFS. As a result, you saw the set of options that were available for the admin to enable. And once enabled, it fundamentally is provided as a result of it. It's just a framework. They built it to the framework. As soon as ADFS decides that additional authentication needs to be done, if there's only one, we automatically invoke that adapter. It fundamentally now controls the end user experience. Call actually goes up to the cloud service. That calls and makes a call back to me, and then finishes back, and then the adapter says, I'm done, as a result, and it was successful. That kind of completes the transaction. There was a question here.
Well, I guess to kind of clarify on what you was asking, so the Azure Active Directory service is calling to a cloud service to make that phone call.
Yes, there is a piece of code that's running on the ADFS servers that fundamentally controls this experience that you just saw, but how it actually authenticates based on the user input or who the user was, it makes a call to the cloud service that fundamentally makes does the transition to call the phone.
Is that a feature of the cloud service that's just generally available?
It's a feature of the cloud service that is available. It is. I don't have specific details on the licensing model, so I can't. But I'm sure that we'll disclose a lot more of the licensing model pretty soon. Okay. Yes, there was a question here.
How would you support other languages
in English? So the way the model works is that we supply the client locale of the browser that kind of came in. So ADFS by default, all our sign-in experiences are like. As we think about, we support all the Windows client languages by default. Any customization that you make into ADFS, you have the ability to add custom locales or be able to add messages based on the locales, be able to customize them. In addition, the locale is actually provided to the adapter, and the adapter gets to make the decision and provide additional strings based on that locale.
So is it possible to change the wording?
Yes. We provide customization of a lot of things on those pages by just changing them. Yes.
Do you have a list of other partners that you expect?
I can't disclose anything now, but we are working with other partners, and which exactly is, it started working now. More on the way. So, okay. Yeah, we have. On a device.
So is there any way for EVS to present other authentication other than having first type in my password?
So I think there was a question that was very similar earlier. We don't have that support in this release, but that's something that we'll definitely take into consideration. So yes, we do. But you can use client certificates, especially on so the reason why I say is that on Windows machines, or for example, on any device, if you provision the client certificate and attach it to the AD account, you can fundamentally put all your external access just to be X509auth and drive through it. So, yeah. But, so your MDM solutions can get those certificates in, blah, you know, you can get all of that done. Yes, I saw a question there. So ADFS is part of Windows Server. So it is a role, it's part of you. If you have a Windows Server license, you just get that as part of it. So, I thought I saw. Okay, so I'm gonna jump to the next phase. We talked about authentication. Now we're gonna talk very quickly about authorization. So this is an extension of our concept that we already have today, which is we already had the ability to be able to authorize on a per application basis. We can say, for this application, I get to use the context that's available.
Now, we've got more context to play with. You got the device context, you got the request context, you got user context, all available for you to essentially make those decisions. Now, a key part, like I mentioned, we kind of moved away from IaaS. One of the things that customers have asked us is that, hey, I want to be able to, across different applications, when we do an access denied, there's different type of requirement on what to tell the end user on what they need to do. For example, in some cases, you just want to be obscure and say, hey, go contact your IT. In some cases, you want to kind of say, oh, you need to do X, Y, Z as a result to be able to kind of provide a useful end message to say what to do that. So we now support being able to customize messages on a per application basis so that you can drive the experience. So let me get to a quick demo to showcase that. Well, this is refreshing. So I am going to just use PowerShell. In this case, I'm taking the same Who Am I app. Oops, let me just move back a bit. So I'm taking the same Who Am I app and writing the issuance authorization rules and also modifying my web content for that application when there's an access denied. And let me run through this, and you'll get to see the experience. Okay. So let's close, come back in. So in this case, John is not part of that security group. Oops. Oh. Okay. So let's remove John. Okay. Let's just do this again. Just to. So from the perspective of authorization, so one of the key things, it's here.
Thank you for using Microsoft Sign-In Verification. You have been signed in. Goodbye.
Thank you. Yes, I believe there will be, but I don't have the details. Right. So as you can see right now, that message that I added was essentially said, hey, you need to be part of this group for this application. So as a result, you whatever set of processes that you may have to get that membership to that security group approved, you need to follow as a result of it. Another kind of cool feature that we did add as part of based on customer feedback, as part of experiences, is that in some cases you want to report the error to the administrator so that to help. So we've actually added the capability to automatically report a few things as part of, kind of being able to construct some core piece of information. What is your activity ID so that you can go look up? All of this can be sent to the admin. For example, could even be sent into an automated ticketing system to essentially generate a ticket. Okay, so that is, let me jump back to my slides. Now, a key part is that I think, a lot of people kind of brought up the notion of when you're thinking about work from anywhere, while in general we would want, as some of you brought up, the notion of being able to move away from usernames and passwords, based on varying set of applications we still need, it's still out there. So one of the key things when, especially as we drive more towards a work from anywhere concept, a lot of organizations are always concerned, what about like brute force attacks against my password? How do I think about doing that? And this has been a request, for example, into us by quite a few set of customers. What we've done is we've added the notion of adding an extranet-based soft lockout scheme that it doesn't necessarily require any lockout policies to be enabled, but it can be layered on top of it if needed be. Where the only thing that you get to do is that you define a threshold of bad passwords that says beyond that, stop access from the extranet for a specific window. So let's say 30 minutes or an hour or... But the reason why we did it that way is that in case there is some aspect in which still an end user needs to get access, they can still come through other mechanisms inside the firewall to be able to get access to that. So this is only about the extranet that says that if a request about with username, password authentication across all our endpoints, it really doesn't matter, across all our protocols, it really doesn't matter, we will actually block access for a certain period of time if you've been having bad passwords. So let me jump into a quick, actually before I do that. So this is an interesting part. Now, like I mentioned, the notion of workplace devices gives us additional security. A key aspect, sorry, do we have a question?
Yeah, what is it used to decide if a user is on the extranet or internet?
So the web application proxy that we have a session tomorrow on, Hiro out there will be doing that session, is actually an extension of the ADFS proxy. That traffic, piece of traffic actually goes through that. So we know whether that set of headers in terms of being able to, we set a set of headers as part of that to be able to do that. So your notion of controlling your configuration helps you determine essentially whether it's coming from inside or outside. Now, protection from lost devices. There's always the case where people are concerned about lost devices, especially, and saying, how do I, hey, we've been thinking about giving SSO, longer-lived SSO, what does it mean for a lost device concept out there? So what we've added is the ability where you can revoke a device in the Active Directory, and as a result, any prior state will fundamentally be denied access and gets audited so that it's kind of clear in terms of if that access from the device that is reported as lost is stolen. So there are a few things in terms of what happens out here. So there are two capabilities. One is, and I'll get into that. When the authentication actually happens, we know about the device through the channel, that because the certificate is available in the channel, and we also have an SSO state. Now, there's a series of validations that happen as a result of it. When we validate the SSO, we validate, hey, if an SSO is presented, is the user still enabled in the directory? So yes, okay, check, good. Then we go and say that, hey, oh, a device was in the channel, it's present in the SSO, let me go check the directory again to say, can I find the object? And if I do find the object, is it enabled? Now, if either of these conditions are met, it's like, okay, that's not a good sign. We drop out the SSO at that point in time, which means we do not recognize this credential anymore. That's not a good thing. So, and immediately clear out the cookie on that client, and we'll actually fault on an error that says we won't even present the username, like we won't allow them any more access until that credential is never presented again. Of course, you can clear the certificate, but that means that you need to provide a fresh set of credentials. So which is the second case, is that in any time that our SSO state fundamentally contains a device ID, and if that is not present in the channel, we will automatically clear out that SSO. It means that either somehow the SSO got stolen and does not have the appropriate channel binding to a strong credential on the channel, and so we will automatically reject that credential that gives it that additional. For some of you who probably, maybe there are a few people who are on the past the hash attacks out, right across, I think, was that. This is the core channel binding that Workplace Join gives us. So even if you got to steal it or try to replay it on a different machine, as long as you don't have the credential that binds that channel, we will essentially negate that credential. Yep. So the credential for us, in some sense, is SSO is a credential in the ADFS system for the end user. It's encrypted, all of that stuff. But even to accept it, we will, and if that data contains a device, and if the channel didn't contain it, we will say, sorry, that credential is invalid to us. Okay. Which, actually, I did go through out here. Now, another key aspect of this is that, because, actually, it's a good segue, in a sense that since the credential is a strong credential, we fundamentally, at some point in time, you always, most organizations, if they ever have some form of an event, they want to kind of say everyone needs to start fresh. So which implies I'm resetting passwords, people have to go change. There's a series of things that happen as a result of standard security process that people have within the organizations. Now, we call this the hammer feature, which is you just get to set a time in which you want to say, okay, ignore SSO anytime before this time. So automatically, the system will immediately, any SSO that was issued in the prior to that will be rejected, and as a result, an end user has to present a fresh credential, and sometimes it might be a multi-factor credential based on your policy that we discussed, and that essentially drives the whole process. It's a policy. It's just a simple property, add a timestamp that says ignore SSO before time X, and that's pretty much that drives that.
Is that for your entire enterprise or for just that user? Or?
Just entire enterprise. So this is that's why it's called we call it the hammer feature. So okay, oops. Demo. So I'm going to start with a lost device demo. And to simulate that, I need to first join the device to the workplace. So let's see, desktop, okay. Okay. So to join the device, I think some of you might have seen this, since I'm using remote desktop here. You go to PC settings, change PC settings. You see the network section, workplace, and you get to join. Join. Same experience. Now, in this case, the device registration doesn't require multi-factor. I have configured it such that through the rules, and that's why I'm kind of joined. Now, let me show you some of the experiences as a result of the join, because I didn't get to show that before. Oh, I did create a policy, I believe, so let me change a few things. All right, let me enable that. We, in this release, so the question was that can a user join to multiple workplaces?
Multiple users of the same device, multiple workplaces.
So from a Windows perspective, Windows provides a clean separation of you are different users. So you have different user profiles, and all they can join to different workplaces.
So you can have one for the wife and one for yourself on the same device?
Yes. Yes. So that's not a common configuration for us to be. We have some use case called the Roaming Warrior. So from that perspective, that's not something that we really support. It's not very elegant. You can unjoin, join, you can do that, but that's not something that we support. It's not elegant in this. But that will be something that we definitely take into consideration for the next release. Not yet.
And then if a user leaves the organization, do you guys, and we delete their AD account, do you guys automatically delete all of the user devices?
So one of the key thing principles, the question was that how does like some deletion of these user device objects kind of happen? So we have the notion of an auto scavenge feature. Every time the device is used, we update a last log on timestamp for that device. Now, if that there is a time-based policy that you say, if you haven't used that device for that much time, you essentially will automatically scavenge. As a result, if the end user used, let's assume it's 3 months. Let's assume that for a second. All right, an end user never used the device for 3 months, and they come back, the device object is deleted. They just have to go through a rejoin process. We try to kind of keep it as lightweight as possible with not as much like object management as we could. So let me go back to my app, and I'll show you. Okay. So John Doe at control. So 100. Just to show the demos, I've had to type so many passwords. The whole goal is to kind of get away from that. Well, like you see out here, there's a new section that popped up as a result of me joining. You never saw anything. Everything happened underneath the covers. You know, using client TLS authentication to ADFS. Now you see additional data. That's, we got the certificate, and as a result, we went to the directory and picked up the data, and now that's available in the authentication context. That's and I just joined this device, and you can see some notion about the auth. The key concept as well that you see out here is that there is a concept of whether this is a trusted device, which is the notion of a presence of a registration ID, and there's a concept as well in terms of really thinking about, is this device registered for this user, the user that logged in and provided a credential? Now, because you can consider those are distinct states, and for example, if you, let's say you have your provisioning kiosk machines and someone is joining them, you can still get access to a resource only from those kiosk machines because it's a trusted device for you within the organization, but you don't want to give single sign-on experiences. So in that case, you're a different user accessing from this trusted device, and we won't offer you all of these seamless single sign-on experiences that we. Now, for example, I've been typing passwords for this whole session, and now because I'm logged in from a workplace join device, and I'm done, I'm in. Because of the notion of that single sign-on that's bound to the workplace that we actually give you a longer live, it's a persistent session, so even if you reboot the machine, it's still available for you to access the resource. Yes? Yes, we do have full auditing reporting. For example, there are different ways to audit. Like Windows has a standard audit systems. We will log the data, all right? In addition, like you saw me show you all of this as part of the context. One of the things that we think is also feasible for customers to do is that we have the notion of extensible attribute stores where you can, in fact, even call SQL directly. We have a SQL adapter. You can actually call a SQL query and push all of this data in directly into a SQL. So you see all of this information that's there about the user, the application, the IP address, the device ID, all of that is fundamentally available for you. Okay. I saw one more question before I quickly jump into my. Okay, so now the goal of the demo is about the lost device. So I'm gonna go back and let's assume that John has lost his device. I'm going to go to my PowerShell. Let's go look up John's devices. Oops. So as you see, I just signed in. I think this was a different time zone, but so this was that I joined at that point in time, this is John's device at that. So now I'm going to actually, let's say I decide to remove this device. And this device is now gone from my directory. So I could have disabled it as well, but it's just kind of gone at this point in time. And so now let's go try to see what John's experience is. We do not have that in the server release on the, but we believe we will provide more functionality probably quicker up in the cloud as well to be able to support this. Sorry, could you repeat that? No. Yes. If all goes well, there you go. You just saw me having a seamless sign-in experience before. But now, as soon as we've kind of deleted the object, you fundamentally have the ability, like where we immediately block. There's nothing you can do. You keep coming in with this certificate out there, we will continue to kind of keep blocking you because you're coming with a credential from our issuer that's been reported as lost and stolen or not found. Yes, there's a question there. Yes, we also support disabling it. And you'll see exactly the same behavior. So either way. So a key aspect is that, like, if I go back into my ADFS server, which I've enabled for auditing, so that's me, that's my 401 right now, okay. So this is still presenting a credential that is supposed to be lost or stolen. So our goal is that you can still unjoin, that'll delete the credential, and a user can actually go do that. But someone is trying to access, we immediately say, okay, nothing. We're not going to let you do anything unless some action is going to be taken. That's the... So the message that you saw out there is a fully customizable message. So if you want to add that and say, different ID organizations might treat this, like right now they might provide an obscure message, look at the audit logs, which will contain the notion of the device authentication fail, the IP address, they might want to do something about it. Those are all avenues available for a customer. Okay. So now you see that device authentication fail, it was that certificate that was essentially provided. There's a bunch of things associated with that. Yes, we have a question.
Yeah, so before you set up workflows, right, and then it started linking your files, now you deleted the authentication. The work folders actually
deleted it? Yes. So I'm going to quickly jump into my extranet lockout demo as well. So what I've done is essentially, like, all I did was set the extranet lockout threshold to be 2 and an observation window of 1 minute, just to showcase the lockout. So the first thing that I'm going to do is go back to I have the DC, and I have a user called Lockit. Okay, this is using LDP. My mentor was the first person who wrote this. So you can see out here the bad password count is at 0, all right? So which everything is kind of all fine and dandy. So now if I go back to the client, okay, so I'm just going to quickly erase, let's see, charms, settings, PC settings. I'm going to clear out and leave. Which is a simple process. All right, so let's now try this again. So the same app. Did I run my policy? Or was I just showing it to you? Yep, I did run it. Okay, so now let's go to the client again. Stop this a second. This is my last demo. And I'm not. Okay, so I'm going to use the Lockit user. So I'm going to type in something random. Okay, bad password. So you come back to the DC and click on this lockout user. You can see the bad password count has increased. We're good. And I try signing in again. So again, I submitted it. Bad password again. It actually went to 2 in the backend. Now this is when our lockout kicks in, because our threshold was 2, all right? So just to kind of prove it, I'm going to type in my good password. You have to trust me on that. And I'll show you. It didn't let me through. All right? So it's still, we've kind of locked out at this point in time. There's a few things that's happening in the back end. So let me kind of quickly kind of showcase what's happening there. So the first you'll notice is that the bad password count, even if I typed in another bad password, never entered, because we never go to AD. At that point in time, it's blocked at that, whatever we said, okay, AD says that you've already exceeded the threshold that the ADFS admin said, so we're not even going to try to kind of go to AD to kind of authenticate it. So, and that will continue as long as that observation window is there. We also have the last bad password time in which what we kind of key off. For those of you who are aware, the PDC is always aware of the last bad password time. It's always up to date. We always go to the PDC to go check it, so we have that worked as well in terms of the distributed system. Now we wait until like a minute kind of goes by, whatever that observation window that you said. And in this case, it's a minute. So in this case, I was 6:19. So I should be good to actually go log in. So now if I actually did type my password correctly, it will let me through Rocket. It is late. There you see. So now I've exceeded the time. I supplied the correct password. And now we actually go to AD. And if I go back and look at AD, just give me a second. If I go back and look at AD, you'll see the bad password count now cleared out. You can see that the bad password count is back to zero because it was a successful authentication. Now let's assume that after the observation window, there was still a bad password. So immediately AD still updated the bad password count. We will say, okay, we're still over. That's an exponential back off in terms of the observation window. So something is wrong in terms of us not wanting to do. And all of this gets audited fundamentally in ADFS with your IP address. You get to see all of that information. You get to make decisions based on that as well. Yes, I see a question there. No, I agree. The goal is that in normal use, right, whatever you've agreed to be normal use of, hey, let me try a few of these passwords, kind of a deal. Whatever it is, this is why I said it's a threshold that's controlled by you. Beyond that, you know. But the goal of this is to kind of protect any unknown use to be able to start trying to guess attacks against your system from outside. And that is, it's not an end user convenience as much as a protection system to say that you're not essentially allowing anything from outside to be constantly keep trying passwords because they know an ID. I think that's fair feedback that we don't have in this release, but that's fair feedback. Yes?
I think you mentioned that the error message that the user sees is customizable.
Yes.
So is that per event type or?
It's per event type. We have generic error messages, device authentication error messages, authorization error messages. Yes. Yeah. Some of these types are global in nature. Some of these are per application. Like the authorization is a per application. Yes.
Two questions. Number one, when the beta comes out, will the form factor and SafeNet stuff be available during the beta programming now?
We're still working out the details, but at least for the form factor stuff, we will definitely, like around that time when bits are available, we should have. But I anticipate very soon, even SafeNet.
Yes. And do you expect Office 365 to support support it when you go out to the
So Office 365 has a few interesting variations. A lot of this is when we're actually thinking about a web-based UI. Office 365 also supports the notion of WS Trust, where the channels are very, what type of authentication you do is very kind of set in terms of what you do. You don't have a negotiate protocol, and while there's provisions, no one's ever implemented it. So our focus is kind of looking forward in terms of as we think about these OAuth, even for these rich applications, and we're working with Office in terms of being able to kind of, their clients also being able to do that over. Like, for example, these days, I'm told that like LigMAP actually uses now like EDFS. Like there might be more things kind of coming along the way around that. So. Yes, ma'am. The question is about UAG. This is an extension about a web application proxy to support specific scenarios. We really do not want to make comparisons in terms of the functionality or capability. It's an often common question in terms of doing that. But our goal is to kind of focus on some of the scenarios. We'll continue to expand the capabilities over a period of time. But right now, what we support out of this, and you can learn more at tomorrow's session, at about 10 or so, Hydro session, is what are the set of capabilities that you actually have? What are the types of apps that you support with pre-authentication? How does it work? For example, the notion of OAuth is an interesting thing because in this case, you kind of first go to the SDS, get a token, and then present it to the resource on an HTTP header. You don't have the ability to go redirect. So we've actually done a lot of things in terms of making it possible for the end entity, like the SDS, at that point to say, oh, this is coming from the outside. Oh, it's an application protected by the web application proxy. What do I need to do? All right, let me evaluate both policies. Does either one of them require additional auth? Hey, let me do additional auth. Oh, let's make sure that issuance authorization is satisfied for both the web app proxy, which is your edge, as well as for that application before we issue a token. So there are lots of things that we do, and as a result, we actually provide something. But more details at Hydro session tomorrow. Yes?
Familiar with virtual smart cards?
Yep. That just works as part of our X519 auth and being able to do that.
Okay.
So, like I can use, and yeah, even with the ADFS 2.0, it'll just work if you enable X519. Yes? That's using WS Trust, and all the device, all of that is not supported on the device WS Trust endpoints.
Yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. So in general, the device is a AD concept, all right? By nature, we come out with the notion of having a quota per user, and we enforce that quota. However, you have control, essentially, to increase or decrease that quota. So, yeah. Bulk pre-register, I'd love to kind of understand a little more on that, because it's a very... We're shifting away from the standard how you manage computer accounts and doing that, saying, hey, it's my personal device, I'm coming and registering. You know, so I'd love to understand the use case a little more after this if we get some time. Any more? All right, I hope you found this useful, especially since it was the last session. You guys were away from some beers out there, so thank you. Hope you enjoyed it.